Wi-Fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line podcast. This is your hostess, Kat. Hello. And then we have Eric.
Hi.
And Joe Pinionated is back. Welcome back, Joe.
Thank you very much. I am very happy to... We are long overdue to chat about Lost.
I know. I've just been saving it because I was like, do I want to get you at the finale? No. I want to wait till I do a rewatch? No. I want to get you at the premiere? No. You know, so I've been kind of like trying to get the optimal... time to talk to you, and I was just like, let's do it now.
It was a great episode to follow up and talk about.
Okay, so if you don't know Joe, she has a blog called joeopinionated.blogspot.com or just joeopinionated.com, and she is like, I guess, Lost fangirl supreme.
That's one way of describing it.
One thing you did, the reason why, you know, I know you is I did some searching and I saw your blog and you had did a Lost Hawaiian tour of the Lost set, like back a year ago or so, something like that. And recently you did red carpet pictures for the Lost premiere.
Yes, actually, I am a freelance entertainment writer, so I had the opportunity to go and represent TV Overmind, which is a television news site, on the red carpet in Oahu for the season 6 premiere. So I was able to actually interview the cast, which was, you know, obviously quite an honor, and they were all tremendously nice. Just, you basically had 5 seconds with each person, so you had to quickly shoot out a question and hope to get an answer.
Did you get lots of answers? Were they, like, really cool, or were they brushing off, or how was that? Because when I saw you taking pictures and you were there, I was like, wow, if I could do that for something like Star Trek or something, I'd just be squealing, and I couldn't be able to do it. How did you keep your composure?
I had to suppress more of the long-term fan and put on more of a professional face. So I had a lot of enthusiasm, but I didn't get too caught up in the moment. I had a list of questions that both fans had submitted to TV Overmind and also in my mind. And of course, 99% of them went out the window as soon as Josh Holloway walked up to me, because really, even though I would have obviously preferred Elizabeth Mitchell,
yes.
Josh Holloway disarming with his dimples, and
oh my God,
you know, you ask a question, everyone else sticks their microphone in, so I didn't really have time to ask an intelligent question except how are you feeling as we approach the finale, you know. But everyone was really, really nice and gave great answers, and the few people I talked to were incredibly nice, including Evangeline Lilly, who, not that I didn't expect her to, but I didn't expect to have the chance to talk to her, and I'm openly not a Kate fan. So I had prepared a question for her, but I asked her about the love quadrangle, and I got a very interesting response from her.
Oh. Mm-hmm. So any questions, Eric, you want to ask her about the red carpet or, you know?
No, I'm just...
Soaking it up, huh?
just anxiously waiting to get into...
Oh, hush it. I'm still... Let me geek out about the red carpet, because I saw on Twitter, like, just there were other people there, and they were posting tweets and twit pics and all this, and it was just really exciting to see you guys there and enjoying yourself. And
it was great. I felt like, someone who has a Lost fan side and is entertainment writer, and not necessarily like I'm not there representing E! Online or TV Guide or the big sites. I was there as a fan advocate, so I tried to have the enthusiasm and asking questions that a true Lost fan would have.
Okay, and for our listeners, what did Kate say about the quadrangle?
You mean Evangeline Lilly?
Believe me,
I wanted to call her Kate.
correct me.
She said, I'm actually a big fan of Sawyer and Juliet, and then she paused and said, can I say that? And I said, you just did. So, but it was great. That's the only thing I had a chance to talk to her about, and she had to be quickly rushed away, but it was great. She was super, super nice and has a really strong handshake, FYI.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
She works out. Yeah.
Yes, she does.
Oh, I just want to clarify that for those who are interested, my Lost site is strictly spoiler-free. I won't even watch a preview for the next week's episode. I don't like casting news. I don't post the titles of any upcoming episodes. I mean, I'm as pure as they come for spoiler-free.
Yeah, I don't really do spoilers either because I won't remember them. And, like, the preview for next week, I've already forgotten it. So,
awesome.
You know, if you know any spoilers, let's just keep it.
No,
yeah.
I don't look for spoilers either.
Yeah, it just ruins it for me.
Yeah.
And then So was the red carpet and the personal tour of the set by the executive producer,
yes.
Is it Gene Higgins?
Gene Higgins, yes.
How did you, was that just part of the deal of going?
Yeah, that was part of the, as there weren't that many press people there who flew in from the mainland. And so they arranged for a van for a few of us, and we went on a private tour of a couple film locations, and we signed a very, very expensive non-disclosure agreement, so I can't talk about a lot of it.
No, that's fine. I'm not going to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was incredible to have, you know, the executive producer, and Gene's the one who's basically arranged the logistics of all of Lost since season one, including getting the plane from Oakland to Hawaii in 2 weeks' time for the pilot. So she's really the master. And to walk in certain locations with her and have her tell us what scenes were filmed there was pretty much a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Wow. I saw you post one, I guess, post-spoiler about the gravesite.
On DocArts.com, because John's a collaborator partner of mine, and he does post spoilers with warnings, and I couldn't, as a pure spoiler-free person, post them on my own. So if you're interested, you can search by my name and find photos of an interesting prop.
No. I saw that link, and I stayed away from it.
All right. That's all I need to know is, you know, once that prop has been revealed, I'll talk about it on my regular site, but don't go there if you don't like it.
No, that's why I didn't go there, but I read what you had so far. And let's go ahead and get into some of the episodes. I read your most recent post today, and I was going to, the first note that I had is that you, like in the previous post, prior to today, you had thought the little blonde boy was either Jacob or Sawyer, but then you revised it today you think it's Aaron now. And I initially thought it was Aaron, and I thought I was going to get to, like, throw that on you and make it be a surprise, but you already figured it out.
Yeah, I watch the first, you know, when it airs the first night, I watch it and take notes extensively and then do my analysis that night. And then I try and sort of let it marinate. And I watched it again over the weekend and write about it again. And I watched this one, I think, 3 times. And then I thought back to Taller Ghost Waltz when Locke got shot and by Ben, and he was in that ditch with the Dharma skeletons, and then Taller Ghost Waltz appeared. The way they angled the camera for that reminded me of the way they angled the camera of not Locke looking up at the blonde boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this kid is somewhere that he shouldn't be. And that reminded me of the line of dialogue where that other woman, B. Clue, said to Michael, does your son Waltz appear sometimes where he shouldn't be? It just reminded me, it all comes together in my head. Again, I'm a conspiracy theorist, though, so I could be completely wrong, and I am a lot of the time.
Eric, who do you think the little boy was? Did you have an opinion?
Well, basically the same thing you just said. I thought it could have possibly been Jacob. I thought it could have possibly been Aaron. I didn't think Sawyer. You just threw me for a loop just now, because when you said Aaron, I thought you said Aaron like E-R-I-N.
Oh.
And I was thinking, who is that?
Like, my accent is a little weird, so my pronunciation of stuff is weird, so whatever.
Yeah, okay.
Who knows?
But no, I thought it was one of those two, but I hadn't taken it any further than that, though.
Yeah, I think we'll find out eventually.
I wonder what is if there's any, like, ramifications if it is Aaron. Like, why is it Aaron? Why is he a child? What is his role in the future? Will he, the speculation on that is just it's endless.
Well, he's a third, possibly fourth generation shepherd to be on the island. I mean, if you think about it, he's Christian Shepherd's grandson, Jack Shepherd's nephew, and there's people like me who think that they randomly introduced the grandfather Ray Shepherd last season in a one-off just because he was running away from his senior home to go to a place, quote, where they'll never find me. And I'm like, that sounds like the island. Like, I feel like Aaron represents a familial tie to the island in the form of the Shepherds, and so I don't know if that's going to come to a head before the end of the season or if it's just one of those lingering things. But I feel like, unlike Walt, they have more opportunity to play around with the character of Aaron because we've seen him as a baby. We haven't really seen him as a young kid.
He didn't go ahead, Eric.
No, but going back to the Aaron Jacob speculation, I've also read out there, many people have speculated that perhaps Aaron eventually grows up to be Jacob. So that's just another.
Right.
Oh, that's good.
So both answers could be right in essence if it went that way.
That would be very interesting given that recently Aaron's mother, Claire, has been taken over by quote unquote the darkness, which is Jacob's enemy. So that'll be very interesting to see that play out.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Y'all just hurt my brain.
That's what we need to do.
Speaking of Walt, why wasn't he at school with Locke and Ben? Yeah, I wanted to see him at school. It would have been perfect.
I know when he stopped that young African-American boy, I was like, oh, my God, it's going to be Walt. And then I thought, logistically, that's impossible. But it was a nice play.
How is it impossible? Well, yeah, because he's older. And
the actor himself, it, you know, poses the problem in the sense that he's just – he looks too old and his voice is super deep now. I don't know that they're ever going to – they might talk about a Walt thing and get it resolved, but I don't think we're going to see that actor again.
Yeah, he just grew too much. That sucks.
I know, but he was so – there was such an emphasis on how special he is, and the kid can kill birds with his mind. So, I mean, there's got to be something important about that. And also, you know, we don't see the names of all the people on the cave, you know, in Jacob's cave, if it is even Jacob's cave.
All right.
I didn't see Dawson, but if there is a Dawson up there, we don't know if it's Michael or Walt. You know, and not to change the subject, but, like, also there's Littleton. Is it Claire or Aaron? There's Shepard. Is it Christian or Jack? I look forward to finding out the way that there is more than one relative on the island, how that works with the numbering system.
Or maybe just the family line is all they're right. worried about, and they're just trying to figure out which part of the family line in the cave. And then
right.
Kate not being on the cave really freaks a lot of people out.
Yeah, but, you know, I thought about that Kate thing, too, because I've seen that brought up. And I just in my mind, I was thinking, who knows, perhaps at some point in the future, Kate marries either Jack or Sawyer, and it takes, like, their last name. So I was just thinking that would be a great misdirect if one of their two last names actually referred to her. But I know that would be kind of like cheating.
That's
but...
funny. And you just made a lot of shippers happy, both the Jaders and the Skinners. And that's not at all what I was thinking. And a lot of people were worried that maybe it's that her character is not long for this world. But I think there's no way in hell they'd kill off Kate. Pardon
no.
my language. And I think that I started to think the other day, what if, and I said something like this on Facebook, what if she's the variable that Motlock is underestimating? What if Kate... not one of the dudes, even though all the dudes are the ones left on the candidate list. What if Kate is the one who saves them all?
Explain a little bit about your Trinity.
Okay, my Trinity? What do you mean?
Your variable, your candidate, and your...
substitute.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, I haven't really wrapped my head around it yet. And I'm, you know, sometimes I ask my readers to help me figure this out. But there's... at first, I was a little bit obsessed with the Trinity, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, the Father being Christian, the Holy Ghost being Christian, the Father being, I get that wrong, hold on. Holy Ghost is, see, now you got me all confused right now. Anyway, the three shepherds, Aaron, Christian, and Jack, Father, Son, Holy Ghost. And then I started thinking, well, there's a lot of threes. There's a love triangle. I don't really count the quadrangle. And then I was thinking about three aspects we consider now, which is a candidate, to take over Jacob's job, allegedly, a substitute, which is, you know, when the Man in Black took over Locke's body, and then a variable, which, you know, as Faraday pointed out last season, the variable is the person who seems to be able to actually change the past and the future. Desmond?
Desmond. Mm-hmm. But maybe a Kate.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm just thinking that, like me, I have for five seasons underestimated Kate, so it could be that she is the savior. I don't really know.
I started thinking Juliet could possibly be a variable person.
See, now you make my heart flutter because she's my favorite, and her death, because they played it 7 million times.
Oh, my God, what was that?
It's a little painful.
Because, I don't know, I don't even want to try to explain it right now, but I had this cockamamie idea of what explains the message she sent from beyond the grave.
Right,
Miles,
the flash sideways.
About how she knows how it works.
Right.
I see a cockamamie way that could make sense, and that's why I think of her as possibly being the variable. Because I like it. I have a feeling that – I mean, I had just an inkling that Juliet, the one who we saw that they pulled out of the wreckage, that – she may not be the Juliet who we just left at the end of the series.
Oh, I hate you.
I was thinking that possibly she came from, I forget how you're terming the sideways.
Well, we're not supposed to call it reset or an alternate reality. I'm calling it sort of the what-if scenario now, the other Flight at 15, the new reality. You know?
So you're not calling reset anymore. Because reset would be weird.
I heard Damon Carlton say, don't assume that it is an alternate reality. Well, that's very confusing, and I don't have a word for it.
Said don't assume. He did not say that it was not, period. I'm asking.
No, I think he said, like, don't assume, or it was pretty resolute the way they said, like, don't call it an alternate reality because that indicates that there are two separate ones.
Well, so that's what it looks like.
Well, I'll tell you what they called it. So that's exactly what they're calling it. Yeah.
What are they calling it?
Flash Sideways.
Man.
But that is an alternate universe. That is an alternate timeline.
Yes.
I
like your Juliet idea because when she said, we're going to, let's do coffee and go Dutch, it's like she was seeing in the future how they meet. I love that idea.
In a nutshell, because I'm just to make it brief, my cockamamie idea is that to put everything back together, like, because the way we have two separate timelines essentially right now, basically I had a feeling that Juliet, who we saw die, somehow came from the Flash Sideways, and when they eventually see, I'm thinking that they're eventually going to figure out that everything's wrong in the Flash Sideways. And at some point, they're going to try to do the reset to get everything back to the original timeline. And I felt that either Desmond and or Juliet will have a role to play. And so that Juliet actually has knowledge of this whole thing that's been going on. And we're just seeing the last vestige of that. We see her. So, you know, yeah.
Oh, because she could be from the altar. And she was saying, go Dutch. Well, I'm just catching up to you guys right now. I never saw that because I was like, what is this gibberish she's talking? We had to see her die once. Now, and we got to see her die in the preview and the recap. And then we saw her die again. It was like four separate times that night we saw Juliet die. And then the very last time she died, she was like Dutch and blah. Oh, that is so perfect. She's giving her information like 12 monkeys go back in time and do this.
And what was actually bothering me, but it was just resolved in the last episode, was because at least now we know we have, I guess we're working with two universes at this point. Because up until the last episode, I thought we may possibly be dealing with three universes.
That'd be too much.
I know, but I was worried because I thought perhaps Knotlock and Richard and all them and Sun were still in the original and had the Flash Sideways. But I was not yet convinced that our lost crew from the 70s, I wasn't convinced that they came back to a 2007, which we had already seen, not until this last episode where we get to finally see like Knotlock interact with Sawyer and all that. That finally laid that to rest to me because I was still holding on to that because it didn't seem immediately clear to me why they should have necessarily come back to their original timeline after the incident.
Right.
But at least now we've cleared that up, I think. So at least now I'm down to two instead of three.
Okay, Kat, what's your next question, girl?
Okay, this mythology we got going with Jacob and Man in Black. I asked Eric this question, and I'll ask you. What mythology is this similar to? Are they volcano gods, Greek gods? Are they aliens? Who do we think these people are?
I actually don't necessarily think. A lot of people think that they're biblical to Jacob and Esau, his brother. And I think that obviously there are shades of that, and I think there are shades of Egyptian mythology. I'm not an expert on either. I simply think they are representations of good and evil and the good guys and the bad guys that we've heard about since day one. But it's unclear who's on which side.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's a stereotypical, like, yin and yang thing, you know, balance. And if you look at, like, Christianity, the most obvious thing is just God versus Satan. They're always, like, working again, trying to Satan's always trying to undermine God in Christian mythology.
Right. So who are we saying is good and who are we saying is bad?
I don't think we can yet. I think there really, really, really wants to believe that, especially down to the black and white outfit, that Jacob is good and the Man in Black is bad. But I'm not necessarily buying into that yet.
Let me tell you why I don't buy into that as well. We know Jacob is Mark, I guess, Pellegrino is how you pronounce his last name.
Yeah.
He plays a type. The actor. He always plays bad guys who thinks he's doing something good. Huh. Or most times he's always a bad guy. You know, he was an abusive husband in Dexter. He's Lucifer in Supernatural right now. he was a con man in Burn Notice. He was a fulcrum agent on Chuck. I mean, this guy continuously plays a bad guy or a really dark shade of gray. So that is my whole, I guess, outer
take on it.
Yeah, an outer look on it. So, I mean, how do looking at that or thinking about that, What do you think about Jacob?
You know, funny, on the opposite end, I'm more familiar with Titus Welliver, the actor who plays the Man in Black from Deadwood, and now he's on The Good Wife. And I feel like he's got the same sort of smarmy presence that Jacob does, that Mark Pellegrino does, which is they're smarmy, they're smart, they seem to be playing both sides, and I think that they really cast this quite well for the two characters that are going to wind up being so essential to the mythology.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like that four episodes into the final season and 5 years later, we have no idea who's good and who's bad at all.
Wow. So, because I thought maybe I was going to get some insight, but we have two virtually dark gray guys. We don't know what's going to go on.
There are shades of gray.
Oh, man. Okay. Eric, what do you have? I'm looking at notes. Yeah, what do you
don't have?
Have
much, but I'm still wondering about Richard and his origins. Oh, wow. I don't know. I've brainstormed a lot just by myself because I've read, you know, a lot of people want to say that he came from the Black Rock, the ship.
Right.
Don't you say that, Joe?
I do, and I also think that the frozen donkey wheel is from the stern of the ship.
I think it's possible, of course, that he could have been from the Black Rock, but more than that, and I think it can work with the Black Rock theory, or it doesn't have to. But for some reason, I have a feeling that he was originally natively born Egyptian. I just have that feeling.
Oh.
And I know the actor naturally looks like he wears eyeliner. He always looks like that and everything. But still, that just adds it to me that he could be his character should be Native Egyptian. And if he was Native Egyptian, I think he could have been to the island before the Black Rock thing. And he could have been a captive or who knows what on the Black Rock returning to island. So there's many ways it can still all fit. It can, you know, it's still open regardless of if it's Egyptian or not.
So. I agree. Your two points about Alfred that I love. One is that in real life, quote unquote, Richard Alfred that name is strongly associated with Ram Dass. And I'm not good with the spiritual and the biblical, but Ram Dass is a very popular spiritual leader to a certain subset of people right now as we live and breathe. And also, I love that one of the main sounds of the black smoke monster is chains. And so the fact that he said, Notlock said to Alfred, it's good to see you out of chains. I think that there's a direct connection to how the man in black arrived on the island and how Alfred arrived on the island.
Mm-hmm.
Just a thought.
I'd also like to learn more about Dogen as well. I find him very interesting.
I think he's upset or impatient with new characters, but I think that Dogen and Lennon will prove to be very interesting in the end.
They're interesting, but so these people have been on the island the whole time just chilling out in the temple?
Yeah, basically hiding and protecting, like, the tail section children. And I believe there's some kind of probably education school system there. And they, you know, because Ben always said to Juliet, you know, when she'd ask about the kids, well, they're where they're supposed to be. And Jacob is protecting them. And I think that is the last patch of protection.
Wow, mm-hmm. I never knew where those kids, that's where those kids are.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's a mystery solved. I just didn't get that.
Yeah, they just showed them in like the second episode of this season.
Yeah.
Well, I saw the stewardess. Yeah, I don't recall.
And she did. She asked Emma to bring water to one of the Losties or something. So we're like, oh, there she is.
I've briefly read something on your blog, Joe, about the temple and maybe it being built over the volcano. So. The island didn't flood like in the sideways or another?
I'm not sure how it relates to whatever timeline, but I've always been really interested in the ash that was used to surround Jacob's alleged cabin, and also the fact that, you know, Ilana and her team have ash to protect themselves from the black smoke monster, which is ironic since smoke and ash sort of go together. And I've researched ash quite a bit, and there's some, you know, ghost hunters in past have used a mixture of ash and salt from the sea, and obviously there's a bountiful of that right where they are, to protect themselves from evil spirits. And then I started thinking about the spring, which is the healing waters that they put Saeed in, and I was thinking that the temple's been there for so long, and it probably was built by or with Jacob, that perhaps they built it over a special volcanic vent that provided a lot of protective ash that mixed with the seawater. You know, this obviously just pure speculation, but the fact that they dipped young Ben in it after he was shot, and then they tried to save Saeed, and they sort of did. And, you know, I think the water was murky because Jacob was just killed. So I know that's a lot to process, but I think that the spring and the temple is specifically built on that location.
Yeah. I'm also confused, or not confused, but just wondering exactly how the water changes you. I mean, we kind of understand a little bit of how it, or what it did to Ben, young Ben.
Right.
But then with it making Saeed evil, and then, or supposedly, and then with the whole thing with supposed evil Claire, or Rousseau Claire, or I don't know what you want to call her.
Island Claire, yeah.
Yeah, and then I'm also a bit confused of how that murky water, how it does or does not tie into when the French team was taken under the temple wall by the monster, and then they came out, changed, or different. You know, so does that all tie into the dirty spring, or doesn't it?
I don't think the spring ties into the darkness at all. I think the spring is sort of a preventative measure, either before or after one's been affected, and that's why they ran the test on Saeed after he was resurrected. I believe that – I'll get to a couple points here. It's my understanding, and of course, this is pure speculation, that the spring is protects against what happens when someone is infected by the darkness, which is the being affected by the black smoke monster / man in black somehow. The French team went under the temple. Under the temple is sealed off and separate from the spring and above the temple. And they were in close proximity to Smokey, which is where they all got, quote unquote, the sickness, which we now know is the darkness. They were not – the only people who were allowed to be brought to the spring to be saved are those, at least in my interpretation, those who are not killed by natural causes, those who are not dying of cancer, but those who have been shot, those, you know, so both young Ben and Saeed were shot. And they were also, the fact that when Albert took young Ben and said he'll never be the same and he'll never remember this, I'm not quite sure how that works into it, if it obviously affects their mind. And so we have yet to see what exactly happens to Saeed, except that, you know, the obvious metaphors are that he's been cleansed of his sins, because right after he got shot, he was talking about where he would go and he would die, because he's killed and murdered a lot of people and tortured a lot of people, and he deserves what he gets. Then he wakes up a new man, resurrected. So I'm not exactly sure, but I think that Smokey lingered a lot below the temple. He wasn't protecting it. He was not letting people into it. So he would kill people. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the next thing that's a little bit confusing me, because has the smoke creature always supposed to have been, like, tried – have they always tried to keep him away from the temple, or has he had access to the temple in the past? Because I'm wondering why he obviously had that vent that was specifically made for him in that temple wall, underwall area.
Right.
Because, you know, because in case anyone forgot, when the Lossies came into the temple this season, they saw the hole in the floor where
where
Ben had fallen through, and he was judged and, by the monster, when the monster came out of like a stone grating, and there was a picture of was it Anubis? There's a hieroglyphic of Anubis talking to the smoke creature on the wall. Yeah, so that was obviously built and established for the smoke creature to pass through or whatever. So I was wondering why that was right there on the fringe, the outer fringe of the temple area, because I wasn't sure if the smoke monster was able to go into the temple before, but now they've put the ash and he can't, or, you know, I don't know how that works. And so
there were hieroglyphics on the wall of the smoke monster talking to Anubis, who we think Richard Alpert is Egyptian.
Right.
Was there more?
It was
there a theory?
Kat, it was the episode.
I remember where, because I was kind of upset with that episode, because I was like, oh, he's going to fight Smoke. But now that we know Smoke is the man in black fake lock,
right,
and that's more interesting. But now I'm thinking, well, if there's a story on the wall about the smoke monster and an Egyptian, then maybe we have another clue. But no.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I don't really know either. I think it's also possible that there used to be a friendship before there was an enemy, you know. And when it seems like, when I think I just wrote about this, when the man in black is not locked, takes Sawyer down to Jacob's cave, he has a familiarity with it and an ease of like getting there. And I feel like, A, I don't know if that's really Jacob's cave or if it's his, or B, if they used to be friends before they became enemies.
But by the way, was it? I think it was in your blog entry. You wrote the thing about Jacob's ladder.
Yeah.
That was brilliant.
I mean, I like that.
No,
too.
Because I think that is absolutely right on. In a sense, the ladder being the
ascension and descension of souls who are suffering.
Yes, but yeah, the latter being that limbo in between the two places.
Yep. Between heaven and hell, yeah.
That is absolutely deliberate. That I'm absolutely certain that is right on the money, because that similar motif is utilized frequently in a lot of movies and literature and TV shows. That is absolutely on the money. That is not.
I laughed when I first saw that letter. I'm like, oh, look, it's Jacob's letter. And then I went, oh, it is actually. Yeah. They went there. Okay.
And nothing could be more deliberate than that.
Exactly.
By the writer.
Yeah, and they polished it off with the scales, the balance scales and everything.
I call them the scales of injustice. Yes. Mm. Black and white. I love that. The inside joke. That was great. I mean, they write this show for themselves and for the fans, because only like diehard people are going to get that. That, mm-hmm. You know, the man in black, he took up the white stone and he threw it and Sora's like, what was that about? That was an inside joke. You know, dating back to the pilot episode with the black and white. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. So do you think, how is this going to, how many episodes do we have left? Do you know?
There's, I believe, 18 hours total. So there's a 2-hour premiere and a 2-hour finale. So I'm not good at math, but I know the finale, I believe, has been set for May. It's going to be a Sunday night 3-hour event.
Oh, God.
So as I talk to you, I'm looking at my calendar because I want to double check this, because I'm trying to decide where I'm going to watch the finale. I've been invited to a few parties and I...
Look at you, party animal.
Well, it's going to be hard for me. Yeah, Sunday the 23rd. Because it's hard for me, because I love watching Lost Alone, because as you can imagine, I have a lot of reactions and I take a lot of notes and I have to pause. But
I'm not going to be able to watch it with a group full of people.
Yeah. I mean, watching it on the beach, the first hour on the beach in Oahu was amazing, because you have 15,000 people who were dead silent, not a rustle of noise or sand for an hour with their jaws gaping, watching the show we all love, was an incredible experience.
Wow.
But I also love reacting and being ridiculous in my own home. So I tend to not go to lost parties, you know. So, yeah, we have I don't think actually what's nice, even during the Olympics, they're not taking a break. So I think we should have a pretty straight shot of episodes all the way through May 23rd.
Wow. So do you think they're going to end it with a whimper,
No.
A bang? Yep. Do you think we're going to get the fangasm that we've been waiting on all these years?
Given that we're in episode 4 and they just revealed the numbers and basically how they brought people to the island, I think that they're accelerating. Their foot is on the lead pedal. And I don't think it's going to end them and Louise style off a cliff, but I don't also think it's going to end like Sopranos. I think that we're going to get 45% of the main mysteries resolved. We're
going to
end. I do. That's my estimation.
What's the low number?
I'm a fan of it being ending without a lot of answers. I think that the whole show is open for serious speculation, and there's not necessarily the right answer. I think that they are going to end it with, I don't know, I'm going to say 8 to 10 jaw-dropping moments, but that along the way, they're going to give us many more gifts of answers.
I feel that it's going to be fairly well wound up and tied with a nice bow as well as it can. I think this is going to be one of the rare times when any great show that's ever existed actually goes out and feels complete and nice and satisfying at the very end.
Yeah.
It's so rare and so, you know.
And they've said since day one they have had the exact final 5-minute scene written. So to know in season 3 their ending point, that they could build up to that final 5 minutes they've always known how it's going to end, is absolutely phenomenal. And given the freedom of having a season where you don't have to worry about ratings and you don't have to worry about fans, and you write the story that's always meant to be written and produce it that well, it's going to be phenomenal.
What season did they say that they know?
Season 3. They were given the okay by ABC to end in 6 seasons.
So that's when they knew the final scene in season 3?
No, they said they knew from the get-go the actual how they wanted it to end, but they didn't know how long they would have to play with at that point.
You know, I mean, with the final scene. The final 5 minutes.
Right.
When was that decided? At the very beginning?
I think they knew how it was going to end. They just didn't know if they were ever going to be given the opportunity.
Canceled.
I believe that once they negotiated the end date in season 3 for 6 seasons, they built every script toward that ending moment.
I
totally felt it when it happened too. I felt the shift
the
in writing. Yeah, and I felt and the difference in the like I could tell that there was a direction in writing at that point because, no pun intended, but the show was actually very lost right before that happened.
I felt it, and
I could feel that my interest was waning at that moment.
Yeah.
But right when the news came out, because I remember hearing about when they negotiated it and they had it set, right away I noticed the plot and everything becoming much tighter and focused, whereas before it was kind of just a little bit scattered and all over the place.
Right.
But even with that scattered stuff, it's like they're bringing all of it back.
A lot of people didn't like the much maligned first half of season three with the cages, but I think it's important in retrospect. I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it either. And I think that I agree with you, Eric, toward the end. I mean, you have episodes like The Man Behind the Curtain where you learn really about Ben and then that nexus of him and his not so evil, background and how he became the person he is. I think that that really kicked it up a notch with the mythology.
I'm scared for the ending. I hope it's going to be a nice bow. I hope they're going to leave something to want more. Maybe we can get a lost movie. I don't know. Or maybe we just want an ending. I'm not really sure.
I'm a purist. I don't want a lost movie. I don't want a lost remake. I think that these six seasons will live on in DVD and Blu-ray, whatever form it ever becomes, and be one of the most intelligent, well-produced shows that will leave you with a myriad of possibilities. And I don't think it's going to be wrapped up nicely in a bow, and I actually don't mind that. I know that people, you've invested so much time and energy into this show that you feel like you deserve, not you generally, but like in general, people deserve answers to every mystery, but I'm actually okay with not getting them.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. That's good.
See, I hope it is, and I think it will be, mostly wrapped up. Of course, I still think there will be
a lot. So to her 45%, you go 80?
80 as far as us right now are concerned, yes. Because I believe that there will be a 20% of things such as, like, for instance, once we learn, like, Richard's backstory or more of the island's historical backstory, like, yes, on the one hand, we now know how this island was established, perhaps, or what people established, whatever. But we will still have the unknown of exactly, what kinds of events and things went down in those historical times. So that is what I consider the unknown that will be left open. And I know that's ripe for, fanfic writers and people like that play with forever. But and I'm not into that realm, but what I'm more excited about is if...
Don't say comic books.
No, I'm not. That's not my thing either. But I feel that I would just love that perhaps maybe 10 or 20 years from after Lost ends, I would love for someone to say, you know what? It's going to be a good idea is to come up with a spinoff now from the original Lost, but have it only exist in some historical time period, either 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, whatever the case may be, and have like a historical show that has to do that. No, I'm just saying I would like that. I know you sound like a doubter, hater right now, but probably what I'm proposing is in no way more crazy than Caprica. And
you're making me accept it. Okay,
because I'm
whatever.
Not saying like redo it. Like I don't want to see the characters' lives after their no. I don't want any of that. Like scrap the everything that's happened post year 2000 or even 20th century. A show that is completely apart. Maybe you might
so something like you want it in Lost mythology, but not like flash forward.
Just like a loose spinoff, so it exists in the same universe, but it just tells like the old story, but done right, of course. I'm not talking like Star Trek Enterprise or something like that tries
Dude,
to rewrite
come on,
everything.
Stop it. You just have to say that.
I'm saying,
so you can put
I'm saying,
damn
done right,
there.
Done right. I think it would be a great show. Okay. And, 10, 20 years ago from now, that's the kind of thing that, that people like to, reinvestigate,
Right. I think we start writing it now, my friend.
because something like Lost cannot just go away indefinitely. More of a big thing like Star Wars or Star Trek or any other huge franchise you want to think of. Yes, because it can't just be done and put away for good.
Right.
It has to at some point come back in some form, whether it's a motion picture or another television series, but definitely not right away. Definitely not.
Okay.
And as long as ABC doesn't spin off a sitcom called Smokey and the Polar Bear, I'm good.
I mentioned Flash Forward earlier, Joe. Do you watch that? Do you like it? Is it a lost replacement for you? Does it?
It is not a lost replacement. I really, really like it. I have high hopes for when it comes back from the hiatus, because I think it's a not as well organized as Lost, and I think it's more of the marketing and promotions people at ABC tried to position it as the next Lost, but those expectations were higher. I think it's a great cast. It has a great premise. I enjoyed the book tremendously by Robert J. Sawyer, but I think it needed a little rework, and so I can't wait for it to come back, and I hope it has a few seasons to grow.
Okay.
I absolutely don't think it would be a Lost
Nothing can replace Lost, though.
Yeah, replacement. That's what's.
Well, you know, maybe just not a direct replacement, but maybe a pacifier.
No, I know what you mean, but that's what I'm saying, though. I absolutely do not think it, in any way it'll be a Lost pacifier, because I just think it's dodgy. I'm very skeptical to see if Flash Forward will come back in the fall. I'm highly doubtful.
Well,
at this point,
it's coming back, but it's coming back at a reduced show number.
Well, no, I know it. Yeah, I know it's coming back in this, you know, spring or whatever. But I'm saying I'm very doubtful that it'll return in the fall after the spring.
Oh well, Eric, you're so positive. You know, I don't
know. I'm just saying, the writing is on the wall. You know?
Revisit it when it comes back in March, and then we'll talk.
Okay.
Don't think it'll be back around come August, September. But for me, the only pacifier I see in sight is Fringe. And no, it's definitely not a replacement, but it's the next closest thing I can think of for me.
What about you, Jen?
I love Fringe. I worry about the ratings, but I hope Fox sticks with it, unlike Dollhouse. But I love Fringe.
What about what is your lost pacifier for right now? That when Lost goes, what do you have to cling to?
My pillow. No, I mean, a lot of people are actually worried about my, like, post-Lost syndrome. I don't know what they're calling it, but I am okay with it. I have spent 5 out of the 6 years extensively analyzing, rewatching, and thinking about it, and talking about it, and writing about it, and I love every second of it. But I also have a pop culture site, and I watch 30 other shows a week
God.
I just haven't dedicated time to talking about. So I don't think there'll be a show-specific focus for me anymore. And I think that I will then focus on just television on the whole.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And before we go, we wrap up, what do you think about that Dollhouse ending?
I like it because I did see the Epitaph episode that came with the DVD. Mm-hmm. And I'm new to Joss Whedon's world, so I'm going to say that. I have never watched a Joss Whedon show aside from Dr. Horrible's blog, a sing-along blog, and now Dollhouse. I'm relatively new. But I didn't expect to have, like, a clean wrap up of that series either. I was very satisfied with how it ended.
Oh, well.
And you clearly were not.
That's just the most positive answer to that I've ever heard.
You know, I generally agree with Joe, you know, from our...
You liar. You're just being positive because we have company.
No. I was already on the record, you know, on our show. I generally agree with what she just said, you know. It was, you know, the best...
Thanks, best friend, Eric.
Oh, thank you. I felt it was the best wrap-up we could have got with that aligned show, you know.
Well,
yeah.
But definitely go back and revisit some of Joss's other work. Definitely.
Yeah, because before Lost, Tuesdays were owned by Buffy. So.
I know. And there's a lot of shows over the years people have demanded that I watch. And
the first thing
I'm going to do when Lost ends is I'm going to go and buy the entire Battlestar Galactica box set.
Wait a second. You're moving too fast. That might not be the one you want to buy.
No?
Wait, why do you say that?
What are you kidding me? She's gonna be depressed. Really?
But again, Kat, people do not all respond to these shows like the same way you do because
look at that.
Because BSG did not depress me.
Yeah, you have no soul.
Here's what I'm gonna go to with BSG. Not only do I have people to talk to about it on Facebook and Twitter, but I'm not gonna blog about it. When I watch Lost, I'm not complaining. It is work, and I love it. I watch it a third time after I've done my second analysis just to absorb it and not analyze it and watch it on a pure, like, fan level. I'm going to watch Battlestar Galactica as a fan, and I'm not going to overanalyze it, and I'm just going to ask around the questions on Twitter and enjoy that long series on DVD at my leisure.
Well, you know, I think maybe I dislike BSU because I had to analyze it, too. I had to do blogs for it as well, and so... that kind of made it a little bit more work.
I think it's interesting that you brought up BSG just because going back to around that time, like mid-third season of Lost, at that time I was watching both series, BSG and Lost, and I was wondering at that time because at that point I had kind of felt that Lost at that time was perhaps the all-around best show I'd ever seen ever.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I take that back. Actually, BSG was starting to overtake Lost in my mind as the greatest show ever at that time period. Because Lost was starting to dip downward in my mind, and BSG was at a high at that moment.
Right.
And I thought, wow, BSG, this is the best show ever. But as the next 12, 18 months progressed after that, Lost totally took an upswing going into the fourth season and beyond. And then BSG eventually around, what year was it? Around 06 or so. I'm trying to think when BSG started tapering and going down itself.
Well, just that don't spoiler. Don't spoil.
I'm not spoiling anything, but I'm just saying.
I know, but just
overall whole. Because BSG was running on full cylinders at that time. Lost was not.
Right.
And then they kind of traded places. Lost went into overdrive, and then BSG kind of slowed down.
Well, I hope Lost ended better than BSG, let me tell you.
So now here in 2010, you know, the dust has settled for me, and Lost remains the ultimate all-time greatest show up to this point all around. And BSG is somewhere in the top five or so.
Oh, whatever.
But not the top one that it
– Well, BSG might be better in a marathon, so –
Right.
I think most shows are.
Oh, okay. They're both awesome.
On a lighter level, I'm actually going to start watching The Big Bang Theory because
as a
pop culture person, I mean, hello, I have to.
You do. Yeah. It's so funny. It's a very funny show.
And I need to laugh. Lost does not make you laugh very often, except when Sawyer gets drunk and needs to put on his pants. Like, it doesn't make you laugh.
Yeah.
Pants on the ground, Sawyer.
Yeah. All right, Joe. Well, we have grilled you enough.
And, I've loved every minute of it.
Yeah, I really thank you for coming on and talking with us about Lost. We could have went another hour, I know.
I know. Thanks for letting me babble on about my crazy theories.
I love those theories. You blew my mind. So did Eric. So we'll see you next time. And thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, friend.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That's our show. Give us a call at 773-336-2686. That's 773-336-2686. Visit us at scifipartyline.com, and we'll see you at the party next time. Bye.
When Lost first started, there were all of these mysteries, and we hoped it would end well. With one season left, we are starting to lose faith, but only time will tell. So we wrote this song for the creators of Lost to see that all these issues and plot points continue to be missing. How can they solve them all? We'll have to see if they can, because we've all been waiting from the start to get answers. Like, what is the smoke monster? Answers. What do the numbers mean? Answers. Lost, we're counting on answers. What was that giant bird and where did it come from? Did it really say Hurley? What's the significance of pushing the hatch numbers every 108 minutes? And why did the Dharma Initiative not automate that process? And how in the name of physics did the Black Rock crash on the island? The writers can't solve them all. Like, who built the lamppost station? And why do they have to recreate the crash to get back there? How Jacket locks Letterback? Answers. What's in the guitar keys? Answers. Lost, we hope you'll come to answers. Why does the monster look like smoke to everyone but to Locke? It's a white light. How does it manifest itself into dead people and project video of people's past? And why were they experimenting on polar bears in the first place? And who built the giant wheel that controls time?
space. The writers will never solve them all. Like, where did Jacob come from? How'd he have magical powers and cause things to happen outside of the island?
Who's the guy that had Jacob killed?
Answer. How'd he take over Lot's body?
What?
You're making it up as you go. The castaways in the past, why don't they remember them later?
When Jin survived, how could he time travel when he was so far away from the island? So the only way that would be possible is if Jin jumped off the ship and landed unconscious in the water, then somehow managed to move downstream, following the precise bearing of either 325 or 305, depending if you go by the number Michael was given by Ben or Lepidus was given by Faraday, and end up close enough to the island to time jump with everyone else all in a matter of seconds, which seems completely preposterous, but they probably hope nobody realizes that it makes no sense.
And we'll likely never get an answer.
There's far too many questions to fit into just one song. Listing every single thing will make this song far too long. So here's a few more to ponder on,
so you can continue to realize that Lost has too many questions that they'll never answer.
Why do Whitmore and Ben fight?
Answers. Why do people get healed
while others are allowed to die?
Why did Jack Kentrell and Sai crash in
1977? While Benson and the rest ended up in the present.
What is the other's
origin? Why doesn't Richard Alpert get older?
Why can Miles speak to the
dead? Boy, do we hope that there's answers
to all of these and more.
Will they answer them before the series
finally comes to an end?
Lost!
We're so freaking confused!
They have love
for the one who tried to
trust me.
I'm alone now.
On the island alone. Please, someone come. The others, they're dead. It killed them. It killed them all.
Hello? Can you hear me?